The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Second hour live, and we are about to check in with Bill Connolly. We're an hour away from Kirby Smart joining us here, previewing the Georgia spring game. So we mentioned this the other day. Bill Connolly, who is good at doing lists, came up with one about the best running backs in modern time, ranking college football's 100 best running backs of the past 60 years. Top 10, Barry Sanders. Archie won two Heismans. Herschel. Ricky Williams, a lot of these are first-name people. O.J., he had a killer instinct. Tony Dorsett, Mike Rozier, yes. Bo Jackson, Earl Campbell, and Reggie Bush. Bill Connolly joining us. Bill, thank you always for being here. Before we get too deep, just give us the backstory on how you went about amassing this list.
Yeah, I mean, it always ends up being kind of a combination of I wanted to grade guys based on, the era they played in, so the 3 yards in cloud of dust era. If you average, 6 yards per carry in that era, that was probably really, really, really good. And so I try to adjust for that, try to, give you bonus points if you did it over a good number of years. But I try to, the best seasons of all time, that should matter too. That's how Barry was number one. And it ends up being this weird mix of conflicting factors and create a little point system, spit out a list, and then make adjustments based on my own, my own preferences, I guess.
Listen, there's no easy way to do something like this, and you've done this many, many times. So I usually ask you pretty much the same questions, and my first one is always, where are you getting the most blowback from?
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem. Barry Sanders being number one is not going to be – not too many people are going to have a problem with that, but Georgia fans are probably going to have a problem with that. I certainly got pushback for picking Barry over Herschel, especially since Barry was – I mean, he wasn't just a one-year wonder guy, but most of the damage he did was in one season. So I expected that. Alabama fans weren't amazingly happy. Derrick Henry – was really hard to figure out since he was really only a starter for 1 year, but he was great that year, won the Heisman, all that. I couldn't really – that was a hard one to place, and Alabama fans weren't really fond of where I placed him at the end. But I do feel like the top nine were the top nine. Like, you might disagree with the order, but it was hard to disagree with those nine being the guys in some order.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple at you, O.J. Simpson, forget – what happened later in life, but yeah. He did not have a long career at USC, right. Did he?
Right. No, he was a 2 year. I mean, he was a JUCO transfer. He was there 2 years. They were two phenomenal years, but they weren't necessarily as good as Herschel Walker's best. Archie Griffin's best 2 years, I should say. And so, yeah, he was always going to rank real high, but figuring out him versus Ricky versus Dorsett was pretty tricky.
And I know they're different type of runners, but and you have there's only so much room in the top 10, but it's still hard to look down and see Earl Campbell 9 and Bo Jackson 8.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you could make a pretty good case for all of those 9 guys being top 5. And I guess with Bo, he was obviously good early on, but he wasn't a feature back. He got hurt his junior year, exploded his senior year, so became one of those kind of not one-year stories, but he did most of his damage that 1 year. Maybe that hurt him a little bit. Earl was kind of the same way. He battled injuries for a while and then put it all together late. I looked at these in every which way, like best season, average season, et cetera. Maybe the fact that their average season wasn't as good hurt them. But, again, you can easily make a case for them in the top 5, and I'm not going to argue.
Eric Dickerson's number 24. Now, this is ranking best running backs, not highest paid, right?
That is right. Not the running backs with the best cars. he was another one. And there are some guys on this list, too, where, Jerome Bettis. I remember Jerome Bettis. He was awesome, but he never rushed for more than 900 yards in a season because Notre Dame had a lot of awesome running backs at the same time. The fact that Eric Dickerson was split in a backfield with Craig James, among others, obviously that kind of, he just didn't have the volume necessarily, even though he was clearly awesome.
We're chatting with Bill Connolly, and yeah, when you go through, there are so many names, and all these names just pop out, and I know you have to have some discipline. You just can't go on Well, I remember my dad or granddad was talking about that guy back in the day. Leaving people out entirely. You mentioned Henry. Who else was on the chopping block?
Yeah, and I mean, Henry still made the list, obviously, but it was still, you know, number one, it was hard to figure out how to differentiate between Wisconsin running backs. There were so many of them that put up gaudy numbers. I couldn't tell if I was over-rewarding all of them for it or anything like that, but there were a whole bunch of guys there in the teens and 20s that were kind of hard to differentiate. Garrison Hurst was a guy, like another right. guy who was good for a couple seasons and then phenomenal all of a sudden, and those were probably the hardest guys to figure out overall. Those and then like the Cedric Bensons of the world who were just steadily awesome but didn't have like the one season where everything was absolutely nuts. So you're comparing types of backs and then you're mashing them into one list and it gets weird.
I'm just going to run through a couple of names just because they're really great players. Sean Alexander,
yeah,
85. Really remarkable. Emmitt Smith, 77, one of the best running backs I have ever seen. Najee Harris, 76.
Yep.
Fournette, 75.
Yep.
I'll keep going through it. Dalvin Cook, 71. He was stunningly good. Barkley, 68, as I'm racing through here. Chubb, 65. Let's see here, another name that might... Gale Sayers, 57. I realize what you're doing here, but it's hard to separate the NFL career, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the hardest part. Like, I wanted to judge Emmitt on his college stats. We know what he became, and like even Florida fans were a little confused. Like, really, Eric Reck is ahead of Emmitt Smith? But I mean, I can make a case if you only look at the college stats, and that's what I really wanted this to focus on. Because yeah, I mean, you can look at, like, Gale Sayers. I mean, he played in an era where there weren't even feature backs. You know, he was throwing passes half the time because that was the offense at the time. So figuring out what to do with him exactly was hard. And we know what he did when he was with the Bears, but I tried to gauge him specifically on Kansas. And that always makes for, you know, it tricks your eyes sometimes. There end up being some weird rankings there.
And I know you explained it with Adrian Peterson, but it's still hard to imagine Adrian Peterson being number 46 on a list of any running backs.
Yeah, his freshman year, if it was a list of freshmen, actually, that's one of the things I think we're going to do in the future is best true freshman seasons. Like, he will rank very high on that. He rushed for whatever it was, 19 yards as a freshman or 1,900 yards as a freshman. After that, it was kind of injuries, and it was, you know, he missed some time, and it was just kind of normal 1,000-yard type seasons, and so that dropped him down. I did those guys, and then the guys like Troy Davis, who played on horrible teams. But produced good averages, got a bunch of Heisman votes. I kind of ended up bumping him up a little bit higher just because of the degree of difficulty of playing for those mid-90s Iowa State teams. And so I wanted to make sure he was well-recognized in that regard.
I think another one that's interesting is number 23, Thurman Thomas. The reason why he's interesting is that nobody remembered him the day after he left because Barry Sanders came in.
Yeah, it's like Barry Sanders only was the feature back for one season because Thurman was so good as a senior. That was kind of wild, too. Barry was basically just the best kick return man in the country in 1987 because Thurman was too busy dominating. But his numbers did stand up. I will say that. I mean, obviously, Barry turned around and destroyed all of them in 1988. But, he got a little better each year, and he had a great senior year. And, you know, he convinced Oklahoma State coaches he should get more carries than Barry Sanders. I guess that means something, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some great combinations for backfields, but that's one I had forgotten about. Number 18, George Rogers. Why was he only 18?
He was one that I was curious how people were going to react, because I know basically the number one thing he's remembered for is winning the Heisman instead of Herschel when Herschel was a freshman. And I felt like that damaged, in some people's eyes, that maybe damaged his the mark that he left or whatever, but his numbers really, really stood up. He was kind of a role player for a couple of years and then was excellent as a junior and great as a senior. So I was happy to see him in the teens. You could certainly, there's obviously not going to be much separation between about him and about number 15 or so. Could have been in any order there, but I was happy to see him make the top 20 for sure.
Another thing I thought was interesting is I think three of the top 21 or something like that are from the same school, and it's not the ones that you think it is. It's Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you can tell with this list, especially when some of the modern guys are a lot lower. Like, I wanted volume to play some sort of role, basically. Like, the, you know, the guys who did it over and over and over again. And in the modern game, you don't have as many guys getting 20 carries a game. Wisconsin, you're still getting 25 carries a game sometime. And the fact that those guys that made that list were also really explosive as well, and they weren't just grinding out 3.8 yards per carry or something. I went ahead. I ended up being okay with having that many on the list, but it definitely stood out. It was definitely – that system certainly benefited them for sure.
It was actually four out of the top, like 21. Bill, before you go, and I know you're here to talk about this list, but I have to ask you, because you're part of a bigger team at ESPN, and we did the FPI the other day for college. Yeah. I don't know exactly where you fit into all that. Do you, before I take your head off?
No, I mean, I know those okay. the SIG people, and we've talked about our methods and everything, but yeah, I have nothing specific to do with
and
that
my
result.
Question is, I'm glad you're not part of it, but I mean, these people, they're not there. They're not like some aliens from another planet who are just trying to upset us by coming up with these crazy lists, are they?
I will say, like, that, you know, I have like Tennessee 10th, so we always have weird stuff in our preseason. All I will say is FPI performs very well during the season and doesn't miss games by much on average. So even though, like, Texas especially was like caught my eye massively. That's a lot of faith in Texas, but that number performs well in season, so I can't complain too much.
You know, you got Auburn in there as well. For those who missed it, this is a preseason FPI: Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Notre Dame, Texas, Michigan, Oklahoma, Pittsburgh, and Auburn. And I'm not blaming you for this, but can you tell me how these six put this together?
Basically, it's going to be a combination of – I know they basically use a combination of the same stuff I use with, you know, it's recent history, it's recruiting, it's, you know, what do you return from last year. I think they put – a lot of weight on the quarterback position as well, and maybe recruiting as well, since Texas probably got a big bump from, you know, getting the blue chip, you know, transfer from Ohio State this year. But I mean, that's no matter how we do it, those are going to be the pieces of it. How well have you done? How well have you recruited? Who do you bring back from last year? And it is always kind of fun because my SP Plus and FPI end up agreeing about 90% of the time, and then just disagreeing dramatically about the other 10% of teams. And it's always fun to see who gets each one right.
Bill Connolly, we'll talk to you very soon. Thanks for the time. We will come back. I'll talk about collectives in a few minutes on how Alabama is doing it. We're 45 minutes away from Kirby Smart right here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are back. Shannon is up next in Georgia. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Paul. Have a good Friday to you.
Thank you.
Paul, I want to throw some stuff at you, and then I want to ask a question. I heard your comment the other day about Stetson in the Georgia G-Day game, and if Stetson performs poorly, will that open up the discussion, you know, about who should be the starting quarterback? You know, Stetson's 15-3 as a starter at Georgia. finished the season last year fourth in efficiency in the nation, MVP of both the playoff and the national championship games, and led Georgia to their first national championship in 41 years. Here's my question for you, and I'm interested in your response. I heard Mike Griffith the other day on the show refer to him as former walk-on Stetson Bennett. If Stetson Bennett was not a former walk-on, if he'd been a three-star or four-star and signed coming out of high school, would there be as much critique of his return this year as there is? I mean, I think, are we just viewing it through the former walk-on lens?
You are correct. The answer is no. We wouldn't be talking about it in the same way. It's wrong to do, but we tend to hang on to the narrative until it's changed. And Stetson Bennett's one of those rare cases where, even though he's done everything right, even though the narrative has changed, and I'll include myself in there, we're having a hard time. And I think it has more to do with this. I think there's a feeling that he should have left. Because that's the perfect Disney ending. And the fact that he didn't, it's like he was given this gift, the Cinderella story. The clock struck midnight, and he decided, you know what? I don't care. I'm sticking. You're not sending me home yet.
Well, I think the kids cut from a little bit different cloth than most people, Paul. I've been to Jones County Community College where he played the one-year college JUCO ball there. I've seen the campus. For him to leave Georgia and go there, and then after the way he felt maybe he was treated or overlooked at Georgia, for him to go back to Georgia, I don't think most people would have done that. I don't think most people would have gone back to Georgia to begin with. And I think the kids cut from different cloth. And I think really, you know, it really upset me the day Daryl called in and was complaining about it. He shouldn't be back, coming back. Stetson led Georgia out of the wilderness. They wandered aimlessly for 41 years without a national title. He led them to the promised land. For a Georgia fan to sit there and say he shouldn't come back is, I think, preposterous. And I think just not looking at it from the right perspective. I mean, the kid's been successful everywhere he's been. 15-3 at Georgia, 10-2 in JUCO, and he's won a national title, all while being overlooked by most of the nation. I know Booger McFarland.
Everything you said is correct. But it all I'm saying is, it is going to continue. It's just that's how I observe it from a distance.
I agree with you. And I think it's a shame. And I especially think it's a shame anybody that calls themselves a Georgia fan would be that critical of that kid after what he did for the program. That's just my take on it, Paul.
Fair. Thank you, Shannon. Well said. Ryan is in Cincinnati. Hello, Ryan.
How's it going, Grim Reaper?
We are doing great. Thank you for addressing me correctly.
Yeah, just like Jim from Crestwood back in the glory days, you know. Just those trying to remind
those
you.
That's when this show was really good versus today, yeah. When it's just it's a shell of itself.
Yeah, kind of pulling a Tammy right now, calling you from the toilet. Just being sarcastic, Paul.
That's okay.
Paul Conley should have been honest with you. The reason he had Sean Alexander down so far was because he helped get Mike DeBose a contract extension. That was the worst thing Sean Alexander did.
You're right.
I mean, he was the greatest high school football player I ever saw up here in the tri-state area. The hype he had was incredible. I probably like the way Arch Manning's got it right now. But, Paul, this guy from the Miami Hurricane fanboy, what's his name? KJ? Is that his name?
Bama hater KJ. Yeah, you're right. Is it JK? JK.
JK. Are you sure that's not Nevin Shapiro calling from prison?
That guy apparently has never heard of Nevin Shapiro because those were the glory days.
Probably not. I mean, legend absolutely drilled him, and I was laughing so hard with the George Teague, Lamar Thomas strip.
That was funny.
One thing about that play, though, that play has overshadowed the play Teague made earlier. That was probably the most important play, was that pick six when he got Toretta and took it back to the house. That put the knife right through Miami's heart. I mean, that play is so forgotten about, I think.
You know what's really forgotten about, Ryan, is how inept Alabama was offensively that night.
Yeah, I know, Jay Barker. Oh, man, they were brutal. I mean, Lasik had a decent game, but the defensive
performance. You have to give Jay credit, though. He built a career off of that game, and all he basically did was hand it to Derek Lassick.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and just let that unbelievable defense make those plays. I mean, I can see why Alabama fans hold that defense so sacred, because they were just phenomenal. And, you know, our boy Antonio Langham, who we were talking about the other day, that guy basically, you know, saved Roy Kramer big time with the pick six against Florida in the SEC championship game.
Can you imagine?
Game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That season was about to go down the drain.
Yeah, thank goodness for him. I mean, he saved that season and saved Roy Kramer big time. So, hey, if you do the anniversary of Mike Price's firing, you should have asked Kiffin and Hunter Ford if they can come in and debate whose firing was better. Getting fired on the tarmac or getting fired live on the Feinbaum show?
I know Kiffin's story got bigger news, but I thought Hunter Ford was more dramatic. Getting a guy literally got fired on our show. He had broken some big story over his editor's objections. So he's sitting in our studio. For those who don't remember, I know you do, Ryan, and his editor calls up. Yeah. I said, "Oh, yeah, this is the editor of your paper, Hunter." And the guy said, "By the way, Hunter, I told you not to write that story. You're fired."
I am rooting so hard.
That's
for
how I
want to
go right here. I want Randy to come over and say, I got a call for you, Paul. It's over.
Paul, if I was your boss, Paul, I'd fire you live on air.
Yeah.
And then I'd take the show over. Then I'd hire you the next day with a pay raise.
That's a great idea. I hope somebody's watching. Hey, thanks for the call. I could use the rest of the afternoon off. Kirby Smart joins us in 30 minutes. When we come back, we'll talk about Alabama getting into the collective business. We'll explain with Philip Stutz right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're expecting to talk to Kirby Smart in the next hour, so we hope you'll stick around for that on this Good Friday. It's always great to welcome back to our show Philip Stutz. The reason why it's so interesting, that I think Philip was the first person to come on the show many, many years ago and start talking about NIL and warning us of what was around the corner, and he has arrived again, this time to talk about what Alabama is doing. Philip, first of all, good afternoon. Great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Paul. How you doing?
I can't remember, but I know we did a couple of shows in New York. We've done countless shows here and elsewhere, but we have been talking about this for a very long time.
Yeah, you know, we first talked about this in the summer of 2019, and I basically said there was a nuclear bomb that was going to drop on college athletics in the next few years. And, well, here we are talking about it right now.
Well, let's talk about what you have been involved with, among other things. If we would intrigue the audience if they knew exactly what Philip did in his real life. But I know you've been in Tuscaloosa recently. You've been aiding the University of Alabama, a place dear to you, to get prepared for what is now a collective. Give us the backstory.
Yeah, you know, the collective was started by famed Alabama attorney Larry Morris, and there's a businessman also involved named Paul Register, and they kind of had the legal and the business background to start the collective. I met with Coach Saban. He introduced me to the collective, or to these guys. We talked, and now I'm advising them to help market those players with their name, image, and likeness. And so that's sort of my role, is to come in and help them devise a marketing strategy for the players. Look, there's a lot going on right now, and there's a lot of fact, fiction, and a lot of fact on what's going on with these collectives everywhere. And I think there's sort of an arms race, and the next 18 to 24 months, we're going to see sort of when the dust settles, who's left. And You know, with High Tide Traditions, there's just one collective at the university that the University of Alabama is working with. And that's where we're going to try to maximize the opportunity for the players there. And that's basically the background of it. But I'm happy to kind of get into why it's structured the way it is and the problems that are out there right now.
So for those of us who have not been following this day to day, I know you've alluded to it in your preamble there, but for the layperson, what is this and how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, all these colleges right now are trying to figure out how they set up entities to make sure that their players have an opportunity to make money on their name, image, and likeness. And there are a lot of, you know, it took Alabama a while because they were very thorough in trying to figure out foundationally what do they need to create in order to give them the best advantage for their student athletes and give them an equal opportunity to make money, right? And so there are a lot of, I'll give you some examples. There are collectives out there that are 501c3s, which are basically charitable organizations. And the university looked at this, Larry Morris looked at this and said, this is not the best fit for us because there could be problems down the line with the IRS. And then they moved over to, hey, should there be multiple collectives? Like Virginia Tech announced the other day that there are three collectives. And collectives are basically for-profit businesses that are serving as sort of the house, the middle housing agent between the player and the businesses that would do the deals. And the problem with having multiple collectives that represent a university is they're all fighting with each other, and it doesn't serve the player best. And what I was impressed with and why I came on board with High Tide Traditions in Alabama is because there's one collective. It works with the university as far as in a compliance way, but no other way. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about how I look at marketing and I look at sort of it in a data and analytics world. And I thought there was an opportunity for Alabama to come out of the next 18 to 24 months and be the number one player in the collective business to helping these players have an equal opportunity to make money.
Chatting with Philip Stutz about a number of things, including the collective at Alabama. You mentioned you had met with Coach Saban, and I realize you've spent plenty of time in the Oval Office, Nick Saban's office. When you go into those offices and come out, you may acknowledge you were there, but rarely do you talk about what you talked about. What can you tell us other than you met with him, if anything?
No, if you heard him talk this week to Ralph Russo or to other outlets, it was, you know, that is, I assume, how he feels, right? Compliance and giving players an equal opportunity to make money on their name, image, license. Coach's job is not to develop NIL deals. It's the collective's job. So he just wants to coach and help them academically and help them. You know, I think Coach's job is probably better suited to helping them get $40 million contracts with the NFL than it is to get $1,000 NIL deal on an autograph session. And so that's where we come in play. That's the role of the collective. And basically, I mean, I don't know if I'll talk to him again, if that's the case.
And when I alluded to the Oval Office, Philip has been very involved in what you heard him say in terms of the analytics, but he's also spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. at the very highest levels of government, and now, of course, talking about this Alabama situation. Philip, there's so much out there that is being thrown around, and I realize your role here is primarily to talk about the Alabama situation, but what do you think are the biggest misunderstandings or mischaracterizations from our side, the media side, in trying to describe this to a lot of people who really don't know what it means, like you do?
Yeah, I saw somebody that was covering the NIL on Twitter the other day said, oh, when Alabama created theirs, it was just another fundraising operation. And so what's happening in a lot of these NIL deals right now is universities are trying to, their collectives are trying to raise money and then distribute it to players. And I think there's a fatal flaw in that. I think when there's this old saying in politics, Paul, that there are things you can change and there are facts. And the candidate's spouse is a fact. And you're going to have to deal with that husband or that wife no matter what, right? And in this deal, there is a fact that no one is talking about right now. And that is that businesses only operate to make a profit and make money. And while there's a lot of money being raised right now by a lot of desperate schools that want to get to the top of the ladder, ultimately, and the way we're going to focus this collective on the marketing side is we have to work with businesses to ensure that they make money. Because if they make money on the players that they hire, then they're going to keep hiring those players, and the players are going to make more money and maximize their opportunity under the NIL deal. And the short-term play, and there's nothing wrong with what everybody's doing right now, but they're all running out there trying to raise money and just throw stuff at players. Eventually, that is going to crash and burn. You know, one of the examples, you know, this $8 million deal they've talked about. Well, what happens if that player, that recruit for that college, comes in and is a second stringer, can't make the starting lineup, right? What happens to the players that are seeing that the second stringer is making $2 million a year? So there are inherent problems across the board. And what I'm impressed with, you know, why I'm working with High Tide Traditions is because that's not the approach at all. They see that in 18 to 24 months, the dust is going to settle and what is there. And so we're taking a completely different look at the collective. It's going to be a data and analytics approach. As you know, I work with probably more data than almost any marketer in the world. And if you want, I'll give you an example. I work with a professional sports team who wants to do deals with Alabama players. And they came to me and they said, okay, so here's what we want. We want players that have high social media followings, and we also want players that love our sport. And I said, great. So what we can do now is find a couple players under High Tide Traditions, and then we go back, and under the database that we work with, which has 230 million American consumers, 550 million connected devices, we're tracking 10 billion online purchasing decisions every day and a trillion searches, I can then tell that professional team, here are the platforms, the social media platforms, the traditional platforms, that these players are going to get you the highest ROI. Here is the message that we need the players to say in order for you to have success in the campaign that we're going to run for you on behalf of these players. That's the key. And no one's talking about that right now. How are we benefiting the businesses so the players can maximize their profit potential over time? And that's what we're going to build. And that's, you know, why I'm excited to be part of this effort.
Always an incredible conversation. I just think back to almost 4 years now when you first came on here talking about this, and a lot of us looked at you with our jaws dropping, and we still are to a certain degree, but now that it is a reality. Philip, be well. Great to see you. Hope to see you soon. Philip Stutz joining us talking about the Alabama Collective and the NIL. We will take a break. Kirby Smart, 17 minutes away, and more of your phone calls right away.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back. Kirby Smart minutes away. Ricky is up next in Mississippi. Hello, Ricky.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? I got a couple of things I want to talk about. And that the NIL is one thing, but I do have a quick question on Marcus Dupree. I wonder, was he on that list that Bill Connelly had?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Well, you know, but Ricky, I don't know if there's ever been a more famous running back coming out of high school, but his college career had two different parts, as you know.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's really what cost him.
Yeah, it was kind of shortened, and the thing that kind of happened with it. But he talked about a factor in. About the season that they had, and he had a tremendous one. I guess his freshman season or whatever.
Yeah.
It was pretty remarkable. But I get it. But the NIL thing, I totally agree with Matt Berry. I mean, he kind of nailed it, man. And I do think that like what Phillips Stutz was saying, you know, what happens if a player doesn't pan out, And then where are those people that, you know, that invested so much into that player, you know, what happens, you know, money-wise? But I do agree that, you know, in another, I guess, another prism I'm looking at is that, you know, not having some sort of cap, if they don't, you know, rectify that, you know, they're going to lose,
you know, a something,
lot of
Ricky, I blame a lot of people for this, but the time to do that was yesterday, and
right.
everyone let this go, and they dropped the ball. And now you can't put a cap on something that's already a law.
Yeah, that's true. But I think what's going to end up happening though, the SEC as it is not good. It can't sustain it though. I mean,
there are so many ramifications of this. I know everybody's trying to paint it pretty right now, but
yeah,
you know, all the money that's going to this, it's not going somewhere else, and that is going to affect the campus.
Right, you know, because, you know, teams like State and Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, you know, the schools that, I mean, you know, because all you got to do is look at the stadiums. That tells you who the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
You know, so
that dividing line is going to get considerably worse in 5 to 10 years.
Exactly. And so that third two-team league is probably going to be imminent, you know, because.
No, you're right.
You know, because that's why I'm saying it's going to change the landscape of SEC football, really, you know, forever, really, because there's no way, I mean, you know, like Texas A&M, I mean.
Well, you know something, Ricky, it's already happening, though, with the Texas-Oklahoma move. Figure it out for yourself. Somebody's got those schools are not going to be outspent. And ultimately, they'll get it right at Texas, and that just means somebody else is moving one notch down.
Yeah. Or out.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, it's hard. It's hard to leave right now because the money in 3 or 4 years is going to be double what it is today. But yeah. Ultimately, it's going to blow up. That's what Saban. That's what Dabo. That's what all these coaches are referencing. Let's check out William in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
William, thank you.
I want to wish everybody a happy Easter. I called in about one question, but while I was waiting online, I wanted to touch on how impressive Mr. Philip Stutz was.
He's great.
I think that's something that Alabama is really going to set the standard on, right? It just his analytical approach and, you know, what he did talked about, cause and effect things, it's just next level, right? So that's another thing the rest of us SEC West fans have to worry about. But look, I want to get back to what I called about Mr. Conley's top 25 at FPI. Should Arkansas not be in that top 25?
Yeah, they should. And a couple of schools should not be in there. I am officially not paying attention to that. I think it's a stupid poll. I don't care if it's an ESPN poll or not. You should not pay attention to it.
It just makes no sense.
And by the way, it's not Conley's list. This is a group of six guys who hole out in a basement somewhere, and they run this through the computer. Wait for the real polls to come out. Don't pay attention to these computer polls.
Yes, sir. Hey, everyone have a good Easter. Thanks for the time, Paul. Love the show.
Thank you very much. And speaking of Easter, we'll spend the final hour. I realize some of you have other things to do, and it's a sports show, and, yeah, we know all that. But we will have our friend Archbishop Marino on in the 6 o'clock Eastern time hour. In the next hour, we are expecting to talk to Kirby Smart, the head football coach at Georgia, as the Dogs get ready for the spring game in Athens.